The Zombies were one of the British invasion bands that followed in the wake of the Beatles. Their first record, She's Not There, made it to number 2 on the Billboard pop chart here. The next year, they made it to number 4 with Tell Her No. Ironically, the band had already broken up in 1969 when Time of the Season became their biggest hit. My guest Colin Blunstone was the lead singer of The Zombies. Before he tells us what it was like to be part of the 60s British invasion, let's hear The Zombies' first single.
Told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
What do you think defined the Zombies' sound?
Well, I think a lot of the sound really comes from the writers. We had two unique writers in the band, and very prolific writers as well. And I think possibly, especially Rod Argent, his writers, his songs were, I think, well, truly wonderful. I think they were brilliant songs. And he also was a brilliant keyboard player. So you got these great keyboard breaks that he would keep putting into songs. Also, he was a very accomplished musician, even at an early age. He understood a lot about music, which certainly he was in a different league to me. So a lot of our chord progressions and the bass notes we put on the bottom of chords were quite unusual. And he also understood vocal harmonies because he was in the cathedral choir until he was about 17 or 18. And if we played a gig on a Sunday night, we'd have to go and pick him up at the back of the cathedral where he'd been singing in whatever the thing had been at the cathedral. And he'd have to be taking off all his church clothes and getting into his rock and roll gear, and then we'd go off to the rock and roll gig. So I think our harmonies helped to make things a bit different as well. I think there were lots of things that contributed towards it, but the songwriting and the vocal harmonies, and then maybe there's a little bit of the interplay between Rod's writing and my voice. I mean, both of them, Chris White and Rod Argent, used to write songs for my voice.
What were the qualities of your voice that you think they wrote for?
Well, especially for those days, I sang in quite a high key, you know, compared with lots of other singers. Nowadays, lots of people do that. But I think that was one of the things. I think I tend to sing sad songs better than happy-go-lucky songs. So that often songs would have a sort of a haunting quality about them. She's Not There is probably a good example. I think they would look for that. Songs in minor keys would be another thing they would look for. So lots of little things all added up to the Zombie sound.
Yeah, a lot of the songs you sang had more to do with vulnerability than showing how strong you were.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's me.
Let's hear another one of the Zombies' big hits. And this is Tell Her No. Tell us something about the song or the session.
I think, as I remember, we'd been touring with Dionne Warwick, and who you would call Dionne Warwick, and through that, we'd got very interested in Burt Bacharach's songs, and I have a feeling that Rod Argent, who wrote this song, was going through a period of being influenced a lot by Burt Bacharach. With regard to the session, we would record probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 backing tracks in an evening at Decca Recording Studios, and then we would put vocals on, and it would probably be 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock at night before I got round to singing. And I always remember this session because I was fast asleep when they finished, and they woke me up to sing Tell Her No. And in fact, there's a mumbled line in the middle of Tell Her No because I was half asleep when I was singing it. And I said, listen, guys, I better just do that again because there's this mumbled line. And they said, oh, no, that's fine. Don't worry about that. And I've heard stories of people who, in bands, who have been trying to copy our version of Tell Her No, and they've been desperately trying to work out what the lyric is. And I have to, after 15 or 30 years or whatever it is, I have to tell them, well, you shouldn't have bothered because it's just a mumble. So there is no lyric there, really.
Where is the mumble in the song?
I'll leave it to you to find out because I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, come on.
No, I can't remember. It's something like, you play the song. And then I'll have a think about it while you're playing.
Okay, why don't we play it? You listen in, and then you tell us which the line was.
Okay.
Okay.
How funny to hear this all the way from America. Yeah.
And if she should tell you, come closer. And if she tempts you with a charm.
Okay, that's all right. First one.
Tell her no. No, 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 don't hurt me now, for her love belongs to me. And if she should tell you I love you, whoa, and if she tempts you with a charm.
That's it. Did you hear it?
Yeah, so it's the part.
It's sort of.
Yeah, go ahead.
It sort of sounds like "Don't love her love from your arms" or something, but really, it's.
I always heard it as "Don't hurt me now from her arms," and I figured, well, I don't know what that means, but it's all right. I get the gist of it.
Well, what it means is it was a rather sleepy zombie who was trying to do his best, but was a little bit not with it. He was amongst those not present.
I always loved your chorus of, you know, the tell her no's with your whoa, whoa, whoa's in it and all that. Did you sing it the same way for each take, or did it always come out different?
Well, it wasn't something that was specifically written. It was, okay, Colin, now do a little bit of something here. It probably would have been similar, but it wouldn't have been exactly the same.
When you started performing, particularly when you came over to the States and started performing, did you get a lot of advice or guidance on what to wear, what kind of haircuts you should have, what kind of eyeglasses the guys in the band should wear, all that image type of stuff?
No, we didn't, actually. And I think that, image-wise, I think it was a weakness in the band. I think, you know, we were together professionally for 3 years, although we were together for 4 years at school. Towards the end of the 3 years, I think we were getting the image thing a bit more sorted out, but it had just been a natural progression for us. And I think that we needed help, I think, earlier on. How could it be any different? Our first record had been a huge hit, record around the world, and some of the guys had just left school, and I don't know how much other bands thought about image, but we certainly didn't, and I wish that some shrewd character had given us a bit of help there. And then you just mentioned spectacles. Two of the guys wore very heavy rim spectacles, and at a time when, if you're in a teenage band, of course you want to look fairly attractive for people, and it wasn't very fashionable at the time for young men in rock bands to wear glasses. And towards the middle or the end of our professional career, Paul Atkinson stopped wearing those heavy rim glasses and wore contact lenses, and he was a very good-looking lad, and I think it might have helped us a little bit if he'd wore contact lenses from the beginning. But just little things like that, I think we could have looked into. And I think also She's Not There is a very charismatic song. It's eerie, almost could be a little bit sinister, and I think we could have worked on that.
Right.
Instead of which, we came with a very jolly little Tell Her No number for our second record, which was, it didn't seem to me to follow She's Not There very well, really.
In one article that I think was written in an American newspaper or magazine, an article that's quoted in the liner notes to the New Zombies box set, the band was described as clean-cut, quiet, well-mannered, intelligent, they behave like gentlemen. Was that considered good or a liability at the time?
Well, it's funny.
To be so clean-cut in your image, yeah.
When you met people in the media, I think they quite liked it because we turned up on time and... We didn't insult them, we didn't spit, and, you know. But when you actually put that into an article, I think it can put people off.
Mm-hmm.
People want rascals and rogues and... naughty boys, you know. And then do you know what he did? Do you know what this guy did? People love that, you know. But then they're not having to face it firsthand. So in a way, I think that it went against us a bit. Mind you, I'm saying all this with hindsight. I didn't realize it at the time. We were just making it up as we went along.
My guest is Colin Blunstone, the lead singer of the British invasion band The Zombies. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. It's 60s Music Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1998 interview with Colin Blunstone, the lead singer of the British invasion band The Zombies.
When you first came to the United States on the first Zombies tour, you performed with the Murray the K Show in Brooklyn, and Murray the K
That's
was
right.
like the
yep.
great New York disc jockey. And he'd have these great rock and roll shows in which a lot of rhythm and blues acts and rock and roll acts performed. Who did you share the bill with, do you remember?
Yes, Chuck Jackson was top of the bill. The Shirelles, Benny King, Shangri-Las, Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, as they were then. And we had to follow them, and they were wonderful. And they used to bring the house down. We had to go on next. The Nashville Teens, there was another English band on there. There were probably some other acts as well, but I don't remember anymore. But it was a great experience. You know, we did 5 or 6 shows a day. But of course, we sang 1 or 2 songs. It wasn't as if you went on and did an hour. But you had to be there from early in the morning till late at night and just go on and do your one song.
So everybody probably knew everybody else's song by the time...
I think they did, yeah. One of the things that intrigued me was we couldn't go out of the theatre because there were huge crowds out there. And Paul Atkinson, our lead guitarist, he left the theatre once. And this crowd sort of... They didn't mean to do him any harm, but just because they were so big, they backed him up against a plate glass window. And the police came in and got him out. When he came out, he had no shirt on. He was just about to go through a plate glass window. And they said to him, they said, well, listen, we've got you out the once, but if you come out again, you're on your own. So that was enough for us. We just had to stay backstage all day. But then when everyone had gone home, we came out. Normally we go and have a quick beer in the bar next door. And then we get on the subway because we didn't really have any money even in those days. I think we were number one. Nationally, but we still didn't have any money. So we'd get on the subway and people would say, you're going on the subway late at night from Brooklyn to wherever it was, which I think was a fairly tough area. And people were just amazed. But if the fans had just waited a little bit longer, they could have come on the subway with us and probably helped us to find our hotel. I'm sure we were getting lost all the time.
But that's very funny, though, to go from, in just a couple of hours from complete stardom at the theater to complete invisibility on the subway.
I know, but I mean, it's a crazy business, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
right.
I think you have to learn to switch on and more importantly, to switch off. Because if you try and live the rock and roll life, I think you'll be in trouble, you know. You'd probably be dead.
Well, let's pause here and play something from the New Zombies box set. And this is a previously unissued recording that you made, I think, at the BBC. And it's a cover of Burt Bacharach's The Look of Love. You had mentioned before that the band had, toured with Dionne Warwick?
That's right, the very first tour we ever did. And we were fantastic Burt Bacharach fans. I still am a big Burt Bacharach fan. He just writes the most wonderful songs.
Were you thinking of Dionne Warwick when you sang this yourself?
No, because the version I'd heard was by Dusty Springfield, and I think she had a hit in America with that version, but she didn't have a hit in the UK. It's funny how that happens. You know, people can have hits with a wonderful version of a song in one country, and it doesn't mean anything in another country. Very strange.
Now you're hearing the sweet and swinging sound of the Zombies one more time in The Look of Love, written by Burt Bacharach.
The look of love is in your eyes, a look your heart can disguise. The look more than just words could ever say. And what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly
Colin Blunstone was the lead singer of The Zombies. Our interview was recorded in 1998. Blunstone has a new CD with former Zombie Rod Argent called Out of the Shadows. They'll tour in September. Our 60s Music Week continues tomorrow.